You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
Thank you so much for coming. During recess, I appreciate it. My name is Tim Horton, the Executive Director of the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee. And today we're presenting advisors on their proposal on privacy and the age of public concern in the privacy and network world. I'm very fortunate to have the Deputy Chief of Public Office, our fellow host here, presenting this briefing. His name is Dan Weisler, and we're thrilled to have him. This is part of a three-part privacy series we're doing on government proposals for privacy, and that's really important to look at. So it's really behind the General Justice and the European Commission has also lobby here to bring the congressional staff on their directive, which is in effect for the next 50 years, but they have an updated proposal that should improve the congressional staff on this. A few weeks ago, we have an update on the website. The commission is proposing this update to their privacy regime, and frankly, many U.S. companies are buying basically by the staff of the European Commission just because of the data flows that are currently collected. The second thing is today's briefing. In a few weeks, we'll have the Commission, Commissioner John Farrell, brief staff on the privacy framework report that they just released a couple of weeks ago. So these three together, they're addressed, they're all part of the same structure of privacy. They all have implications for Congress. So I'm going to open up for Dan, who's going to be closing. This briefing, this series of briefings, is also hosted by the National Internet Caucus Advisory Committee. In conjunction with the Member Committee of the Internet Caucus, and we appreciate the honor of chairs, senators, faithful media, and Senate Zombie, and Congress from Dubai, and the Chief of Boston. So, let me just briefly say that the United States is report on the current year here, and it's a white paper, the green paper, and more together, but it's quite a long time. The policies of the matters in this proposal for the commercial position, in fact, it's an ambitious project that seeks to complete this political process. On history, consumers, and others have a framework of privacy, but it creates a bit of messiness or policy laws we have in Congress based on this work. And I have a report, which is, if you tell the website, the report, nobody brings it on the paper. We also link to it from a recent tweet at netcaucus.ac, so you can go to Twitter and find their report there in PDF. My first edition to Part 5, which is enacting consumer privacy legislation, which spells out what Congress will have to do on the current practice legislation. So we really think it's very important that the content that my host proposal will be discussed at length up there, and we're happy to have this forum. So let me introduce Dan Weisler, who is the Deputy Chief Technology Officer for Internet Policy and the White House. Prior to this, Dan worked at MIT, he also taught at MIT. And you will have worked with all of the consortium, which is the governing body for web standards across the internet. Before that, he was the co-founder of the Center for Democracy and Technology, and in that organization, actually wrote the blueprint for the Commercial Internet Caucus Advisory Committee briefing program. So we're appreciative for Dan's role in that. And you know, so that's my point of view on this. So I'll let you introduce Dan Weisler.
Appreciation to the co-chairs of the Internet Caucus, Senators Leahy and representatives of my organization. It's nice to see many of you here. Dr. Clements, colleagues from the FTC, from different departments, from the press, and it's certainly been a very broad policy discussion we've had over the last couple of years since we came in as an administration. Very clear last from the beginning that we really needed to take up these questions of consumer privacy protection, not only because of how important privacy is as an American value, but also because many of our key initiatives and the priorities that became we announced this consumer privacy policy at Linux, and the team kind of put it also a white paper on our website, and it's as well as the Internet Caucus sites. Sort of a very basic definition that governments always have a critical role in establishing trust, and in trying to establish trust in marketplaces. It's creating privacy or establishing consumer protection laws or fair competition laws, trade laws, we've always been dependent on government to create a baseline of trust to the market. So the internet is no different in that sense. Strong government role to make sure that consumers are comfortable in the online environment, that they're comfortable with the technologies, and importantly, that users can continue to innovate with new services and new products. Based on this, the increasing chance of using personal information, whether this is a positive development, not something to be feared, something to be addressed in a very straightforward way. That is the case that we believe that government. We actually think that the way that rule is executed has to be thought of in some particular manner that we're operating in the internet environment. Because I think you all know very well the technologies and the business models associated with the internet and other digital technologies are evolving quite rapidly. We have to make sure that privacy protections for consumers can keep up with that rapid evolution in a way that the future can continue to happen. We want to make sure. Businesses have a very clear sense of what their obligations and expectations are as these new technologies develop. So we propose what is really a four-part blueprint that I want to talk you through very quickly and then we'll open it up. This is our question with the roughly month since we've released this report. We've had the opportunity to come out and talk to a lot of different organizations and talk to a lot of different venues about where our proposals are. Hearing last week, we're very happy to be able to participate in. At this point, I'm hoping you'll have a lot of questions because I don't think the speech for that we've got four key components of our blueprint. The first is the consumer privacy bill of rights. These are a set of different substantive privacy rights that we believe consumers are entitled to, that we think businesses want to make available. Secondly, we propose a process by which we believe we can implement this consumer privacy bill of rights in a fast-paced manner, in a flexible manner, to make sure that as businesses have new services developed, they are respecting those privacy principles. We have put out a general roadmap of legislation that we want to see. We have not come forward at this point with an administration program that we're very, very much looking forward to meeting with Congress to work with all of you. To take the consumer privacy bill of rights back to the statute. We think it's important to do that. We think it's time to do that. We're eager to have that happen. And fourth, we've proposed a framework by which we think we can increase what we refer to as global interoperability of privacy regulatory frameworks all around the world. And I'll talk about that at the end. It's all connected, but let me step through them briefly. Number one, this consumer privacy bill of rights has some principles. I'm going to talk about a couple of them. But let me just say right off that for us, the consumer privacy bill of rights really does double what we mean. As Dan mentioned, we are going to begin right away. We have begun already to start a process working with industry, with privacy advocates, with regulators, with academic experts, with other consumer organizations to take the consumer privacy bill of rights and principles we've expressed in those principles and implement them in what we call enforceable codes of conduct. That is specific rules that companies will report industry will take on and will be developed in a single process through consultation with all the groups that I mentioned. And that will be enforceable by the Federal Trade Commission. That's part one of the consumer privacy bill of rights. Part two is that we would like to see these rights back to the statute so that they are enforceable directly at the Federal Trade Commission. Just a little bit more about what that framework will be. Let me just highlight three touch on the well-established fair information privacy principles. Those of you who are privacy geeks know about the FIPS, as they're called. You'll know that they were developed in the United States in the late 60s, and when I culminated in the early 70s, 1973, before that privacy protection plan by the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, that became the basis for the Privacy Act and really the basis for privacy laws enacted in the U.S. all around the world in different countries, and are expressed in the OECD's 1980 privacy guidelines. These steps, these fair information privacy principles, really are the global standard for privacy protection. We want to do two things with these steps, though. Number one, we didn't want to say this anymore. Number two, that was actually the first thing that we said. Number one, let's make sure that these tips are accessible and understandable to consumers, that they articulate a clear set of likely expectations that consumers might have. And number two, we want to make sure that these rates again, based on the fair information privacy principles, are tailored to the both the challenges and opportunities of the internet environment. That they take advantage of the fact that we're in a much more interactive environment, and individuals can exercise control in many cases over their personal information if technology is designed the right way. But also that there's obviously quite a bit of collection of information, there's quite a bit of flow of information around the moment of encouragement, but without creating new privacy problems. So we talk about the principles that I think show us the direction that we need is important to that. The first principle is the principle that we call individual control. And since consumers have a right to exercise control over what personal data companies collect from them and how they use it, it's a very simple basic principle. I think that it is an evidence of this from a contrast between the privacy challenges that we've faced in the past in many ways in which personal information is collected and that some databases are somewhere run by someone who don't know who it is, that it would bring its life beyond the control of the individual. We want to restore control to the individual to make sure that as consumers are interacting with the ways they use and collect and use their personal information, that the consumers are able to make good choices and exercise control. We think that much of the work that the Federal Trade Commission has done with the Digital Advertising Alliance, the World Wide Web Consortium, and the Genome Trade Options is a very good example of how this principle of individual control can be utilized. Second principle of conflict, which is principle number three, is the principle that we call respect for context. And it says, and I will say, for those of you who attend for privacy geeks, respect for context is meant to combine traditional principles of specification, that is, principles of traditional privacy practice, by which anyone who collects information about an individual or some other individual that is a pretty simple principle. Secondly, the principle of usage limitation, that when information is collected, there will be some limits expect that how it will be used, how it will be used. So, we combine these in what we call the respect for context principle, which says consumers have a right to expect that companies will collect, use, and disclose personal data in ways that are consistent with the context in which consumers provide the data. This is really the principle that is needed to account for the fact that, on the one hand, we've had tremendous innovation and tremendous opportunities for users based on a much more free flow of personal information. Think about social networks, the hundreds of millions of people around the world who are able to exchange information in all kinds of ways, which they clearly find valuable. But think also about the downside that has been particularly in some cases about the social networking environment. There may be interaction you have with your friends in whichever social network you use. But all of a sudden, to use in a totally different context, you can be used, for example, by a prospective employer. Hire you, perhaps based on any appearance of photos that you didn't really think of as exactly professional, or that a company that was considering sending you credit from your health insurance might actually use information that again, you thought was really present was being used in the social network in office. All of a sudden, it's a very important, significant decision about your life. carefully at the Federal Trade Commission report that the report that they issued, the staff report that was issued in 2010, which talked a lot about material changes in use of personal information, which on the one hand tried to make it reduce the barriers for content notice and choice mechanisms that some companies have felt might be required that you keep getting those questions. Is that okay? Is that okay? The other thing, okay? Do we all recognize those kinds of overuse of notice and choice, perhaps the desire to be compliant with some sense of understanding of privacy, really aren't all that useful to individuals, but that when the use is really going to be different, when the content is really going to be different, some other steps are going to be taken. So this is something that we learned from the FTC report again. I think you look at their final report just issued a couple weeks ago. You'll see quite a bit of divergence between their thinking about the respect for confidence principle and their thinking about how to evolve these ideas of individual control. Third principle I'll point out is the accountability principle. And it says very simply that consumers have a right to have their self-dating with companies with appropriate measures in place to assure or prevent abuse of consumer protection in all ways. This means that even in advance of legislation, even in advance of a point at which all companies might be subject to the set of privacy rules, we want to make sure that anybody that handles personal information is careful internally about how to handle that information, and that there is a point of both legal and customer accountability. That if a consumer wants to know how their information is going to be used, if they have some complaint, that they have a place to go in that company to save that complaint. This is a particularly important principle for us in the global context. I think that you're all very well aware that many of the services that people use on the internet all around the world are provided by companies that might not be in the same country that individual user is actually sitting in at any given moment. This causes, I think, considerable and legitimate questions for user protection and privacy regulators. And of course, as well around the world, they want to make sure that they're able to protect their citizens, that their citizens have a complaint about the privacy practices of some service on the internet. If they have a way to help mitigate the rights of their citizens, that's a basic obligation for any government. What we want to make sure, though, is that as services that are increasingly provided on a global basis, that we have that there's a streamlined mechanism to handle that kind of accountability and responsiveness both to consumers and to regulatory enforcement authorities as appropriate. This is actually global. So the second major element of our privacy blueprint is a call to the industry, policy activists, activists or advocates, academics, regulators to come together in what we characterize as a multi-stakeholder process to take these very broad principles in the consumer privacy bill of rights and implement them in enforceable codes of conduct. So let me say first what I mean by an enforceable code of conduct. That would be a specific consideration of how these consumer rights would be respected in the case of a given company or perhaps a given industry. And that obviously would be something more specific and more tuned to the particular context, the particular technology or service involved. It would be a privacy policy that would participate in many of the same ways that you see companies today place privacy policies. And we know from the enforcement activity that has gone on at the Federal Trade Commission over the last few years that if a company says it's going to do one thing and it handles personal information in a way that's significantly different than those initial promises, that they're going to hear from the Federal Trade Commission. We U.S. companies now being subject to consent degrees, 20 years of monitoring of their privacy practices, the possibility of significant fines if they violate their privacy commitments again. We right then want to begin to take advantage of the fact that we have such a strong privacy enforcement authority in the Federal Trade Commission and want to be able to bring together a number of different stakeholders to this right away. The National Telecommunications and Information Administration at the Commerce Department, which is the presidential advisor on telecommunications and information policy, has a notice out of the commission today. Soliciting public input on what issues this all the stakeholder process should start to look at, how to run the process. So I think you can expect in the next couple of months you will be hearing from the area that all those public efforts will be. Let me stress though in power privacy movement, government really is the convener, not the regulator or the designer about what privacy policies are going to be. We're looking to NTIA to make sure that there's a thoughtful discussion about how to implement the consumer privacy guidelines in this specific context. Looking to make sure that there's a favorable and table that issues are discussed carefully from their point of view once that input is able to do that. But at the end of the day, it will be that process that will come to decide what is enforceable code of conduct for. And TIA is not making that decision, does not have the authority to make that decision, and really will use itself as a convener of first and foremost. We have a whole office. We think to make a lot of progress. It is a voluntary process. No one's going to be compelled to participate in that process. No companies can be compelled to actually take on these additional privacy commitments. In our look at the privacy landscape, the landscape for privacy in the United States, what we found over the last few years is that while we have very strong privacy protection policies, as many of you know, in a number of different sectors, whether it's consumer credit or health information or financial privacy, we have lots of good privacy protection laws. We have an expanded privacy protection enforcement authority, but we have a pretty significant gap where there is actually no statutory privacy protection for consumers in the realm of general consumer general commercial interactions. This is more or less everything that falls within the scope of the Federal Trade Commission Act, Section 5 authority. If an entity sees the money to the company has broken its promise, then that entity is there if they can begin an enforcement action. However, companies aren't applying for any particular privacy promises at all in that area of general commercial interaction. That's the gap that we want to close, that we need to help to close, that you actually have we do have a view about what kind of privacy legislation we'd like to see this week. We've stated a subset of conditions that we think ought to be in the statute, but these are the seven principles of the consumer privacy bill of rights. But we also have a view about how these protections should be implemented. We think that the multi-stakeholder process, especially with legislation as a backstop with these privacy protections, can actually develop rules, develop privacy practices much more rapidly than a traditional APA-style rulemaking process. So what we want to see is the legislation to provide a safe harbor framework with which companies will not only be held accountable to the same principles of the consumer privacy bill of rights, but will be able to go to the Federal Trade Commission and seek a safe harbor approval of their implementation of the Consumer Privacy Bill of Rights. It's simply a yes or no up or down answer from the FTC about whether that company's code of conduct or that industry's code of conduct actually meets the conditions of the Consumer Privacy Bill of Rights. Based on the safe harbor finding, there will be some sort of agreement before they are moving forward, assuming the company actually keeps its promises of the active electoral gap. And to actually implement this kind of safe harbor mechanism. And it's a process by which we think we can keep privacy rules fresh, keep them up to date, keep them flexible, so that they're both responsive to this relief, but also allow companies to continue to innovate rapidly. I want to make a final point about the global picture that some of you heard from. That of the Director General of Justice as a part of the discussion of consumer privacy rights under law. Next to that, we very much hope to fill. We think that as soon as that's filled, there would be the basis for having a conversation with the Europeans about really significantly lowering the barriers to the cross-border flow of personal information between the U.S. and Europe. But even in advance of that, we have been working very hard to explain to our European counterparts that once a company makes a commitment or industry makes a commitment to one of these enforceable codes of conduct, then the United States, that commitment has the force of law. It is an agreement that's binding on the companies, it's an agreement that is enforceable by the federal trade commission. Under the statute, we propose that we would also seek to have those agreements enforceable by state attorneys general. We certainly think that one of the critical privacy protection provisions, particularly in the commercial context, is the final way to reduce the barriers that we have today between the United States and Europe in the way that services that use personal information are governed. I wanted to close with a final word from the President. That's the introduction to the Internal Privacy Bill of Rights released. He said, we're fiction clear, even when we live in a world in which we share use of information more freely than in the past, we must reject the conclusion that privacy is an outcome of liberty. It's the default of our democracy from its inception, and we need now more than ever. So that's our basis for going forward. We look forward to working with you and happy to take questions.
So, as I want to say thank you for participating and coming to this briefing. I have a lot of questions, and we might open up for any questions that you may have. You can come at the podium microphone here, or I can do a full line here and bring it out to you if that's okay. But my question is specifically on the framework. How important, how much of a leap in is it that comes in the legislation? Can this framework go on with success without legislation, or how important is it, not only for your view of success, and NGI's view of success, but also when it comes to meeting level adequacy when it comes to the European Commission's privacy directive?
That's the question. I think that in the long run, legislation is essential here. And there's two reasons. First of all, I think that there was a sense in the mid-90s when we first changed the question of internet privacy in the United States that this was a very new environment that we didn't want to simply over-regulate it. We wanted to allow it to continue to evolve. We still feel that way. I think that what we've learned is that we actually think in the framework that we described, in the legislative model that we described, that we can maintain the flexibility of consumer innovation while at the same time providing increased certainty for consumers. It is the right time to do this. We think that we have a decade or more of experience of this kind of interaction. I think what we've learned from that decade is that consumers really do want a clear sense of what their legal rights are. We want to make sure that the Federal Trade Commission has a clear basis for enforcing privacy rights. Finally, we want to make sure that rights are both consumers and businesses. We think that a clear set of rights, if implemented in a way that's careful and is flexible, can provide increased certainty to the users as well as to the individuals. I stress in particular, we heard during the years of developing this process that small businesses, that innovators, startups in the internet environment have a lot of different questions about what it is that they're expected to do and not expected to do in this environment. We have a statute to provide clarity and provide the basis for continued innovation. The European Union, it's a complicated question. I think it's very clear that if the United States enacted a privacy protection part that you described here, that would go a long way. That would probably provide the basis for what you referred to as an adequacy finding. Let me just say what that means. European privacy law provides that personal information of government campaigns cannot be transferred outside of Europe to any third country unless that country is found to have, quote, adequate privacy laws. Now, because we don't have a single comprehensive privacy protection statute in the U.S., Europe has never found us adequate. To be reported adequate. We think we have, as I said, a short privacy protection enforcement requirement. The Commission may also include that adequately enforce consumer expectations of privacy should come to Facebook or Google or Twitter or any of the other companies that have been investigated fairly aggressively and more than 20 years and degrees. By the way, I'll point out that Facebook and Google and Twitter, yes, was part that there are over a billion individual users across those three services. Pretty interesting. As I checked, we don't have a billion people in the United States. So we have a case here where the United States Consumer Protection Authority, that the European system is not adequate, is actually doing the work of privacy protection all around the world. I think it's what they should be doing. instance, five of the principles expressed in the Consumer Public Sector of Rights that there ought to be an additional regulatory burden. I think that a number of members who look at this question may be imposing a traditional view of how a regulatory process works, where there's a long cycle of rulemaking and judicial challenges and a lot of uncertainty, which we think would be harmful. So we propose a model that is a non-regulatory model that simplifies for legally pending rights for consumers and would also provide legal certainty for businesses. In many cases, that legal certainty could be based on businesses actually following the practices they currently follow today, because we think that many businesses actually have responsible privacy practices. They have good relationships with their users. And we're able to continue along. So I think we'll certainly be in the phase of working with Congress to make sure that there is a way to enact this, that it doesn't impose undue burdens. But I know here, really, I think it's important to distinguish the question of the burdens over assessing from the question of whether online consumption is actually needed. Because we hold the view that we actually don't need any privacy protection at all, that individuals can fend for themselves. That's how we view this as a basic consumer protection need. And we've expressed a framework that can be achieved without burden on innovation. Thank
Governor Ashley Thomas's medium. Also, at last week's hearing, several of the industry folks on the panel expressed preference for discussions that were private and discussions that were mainly held by industry players. How will the stakeholder process respond to that? And how will we create a process that's open and inclusive given those preferences?
So, I can't comment on what those industry witnesses are going to say, but we think from the very beginning of the process, it will be run by it will be an open process, it will be open for anyone to participate. The discussions will be transparent, will be publicly visible. We're going to work hard to make sure that those who want to participate or not be Washington or come to Washington are able to let the views expressed and follow the process and be active participants. I also said that the process of coming to consensus is always complicated, and I'm not going to try to prevent anyone from having conversations that are.
Thank you for coming out here this evening and appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone.